This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. So which plants have proven to do well at surviving and thriving in our region? The Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden is going to present its sixth annual Plant Trials Day Symposium on August 18th with a look at the plants that have passed the test. And the event also features presentations on topics including plant breeding, bringing wilderness back into your landscape, and the best plants of Spring Grove Cemetery and Arboretum. And here to give us a preview of Plant Trials Day, our Longwood Gardens curator and plant breeder, Dr. Pete Sale, horticulture manager at Spring Grove Cemetery and Arboretum, Brian Hines, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturist and Taking Root chairman, Scott Berline. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Scott, Peter, and Brian, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, Scott, the zoo's been doing this for what?
Six years now.
Okay. Yeah. So how did this get going in the first place?
Well, when I started at the zoo 6 years ago now, Steve and I, Steve Foltz, the director, and I, just would have these conversations, what the zoo is really good at. And part of that is trialing plants and putting it out there for the public to consume, which plants, whether it's annuals, trees, shrubs, perennials, do well in regional gardens. And we started talking about putting on a symposium to kind of focus on that. And of course, we could fill a few of the slots with our own speakers, but we needed more to create a full day. So we brought in some speakers from some of the suppliers that we have and people that we know. And it was an absolutely massive success. It was 250 people. We filled the room, and we were encouraged. So we went ahead and we started doing two others, our Native Plant Symposium in the fall and our Sustainable Urban Landscapes Symposium in the spring, and our Plant Trials Day that we're now in our sixth year for.
And so these have been proven to be pretty popular symposiums?
Extremely popular with both green industry professionals and gardeners and homeowners. Mm-hmm. You can really learn a lot. The speakers that we're bringing in for all of them are excellent. This one in particular, I'm really excited about.
So you think this is one of the better years you've had?
Yeah, I think so. I hate to say that because they're kind of like your children. but I don't want to disparage past speakers by any means, but this year's are exceptional.
Yeah, Peter, tell us about what you'll be talking about at the symposium.
Well, I'm going to be talking about Longwood Gardens and the history of plant breeding and selection that has gone on here since it opened as a public garden in the late 1950s. And also going to talk about some of the new research initiatives that we're working on right now.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, Longwood Gardens, where are you located?
We're in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, so southeast of Pennsylvania, about 30 miles west of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. And Brian, your topic, of course, is going to be Spring Grove, I'd imagine.
Right, right. We're going to talk about some of the best plants of Spring Grove Cemetery and Arboretum. We've got, since 1845 to evaluate things that have proven to do well there. So we're going to talk about the historical successes. We're going to talk about things that we've been planting over the past 20 years that have proven to be outstanding for us and what works in all of our different kinds of sites and soils and challenges that we have down there at the Arboretum.
Yeah, you get a lot of people who go through Spring Grove to just to view all the beautiful plants and flowers and trees. Any idea how many people pass through each year?
I'm not sure the exact number, but we do gate count, the cars that come through. So it's heavily visited, and I know we're very proud of a high ranking on the different websites, TripAdvisors, and things. We're always doing well as a popular spot for folks to visit from either horticulture, history, just a great place to be on a nice day.
And Scott, a lot of people don't think about the zoo as just being a huge garden. I mean, most of the time the focus is on the animals.
Right. We like to call it the Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo, in my department at least.
So you flip the order.
Flip the order. We have way more plants than we have animals, by the way, just saying. But it's funny. Sometimes people will come and ask, where's the botanical garden? And, it's
you're standing
pretty
in it.
Much the entire zoo. Yeah. So, we are, I think, an outstanding a public garden, one of the best in the region. And it's just because we're attached to a zoo that it's a struggle sometimes to have that realized.
So how many people work at the zoo just on the plants and the gardens?
We have 12 full-time staff, and then about that many seasonals and interns that come in just during the summer months. And then we just couldn't do it without a great volunteer corps that comes and really helps us out as well.
Mm-hmm. Scott, tell us, as far as the testing of the plants, the trials themselves, what's the whole process for that? How do these plants get researched? And
yeah, well, we just beg, borrow, and steal plants from the breeders and the production nurseries, and sometimes we actually even buy them. Pretty much anything that we put in a zoo, we're watching, you know, does it live, first of all? Does it look good? Does it thrive? Does it require a ton of care? Did it disappear and we didn't even notice it was gone? And then we just report on it, note it. We're formalizing our trialing program a little bit more. Report back to the breeding companies and the nurseries, and mostly we report to the public about the quality of these plants. It's really important that when people do garden, and it's harder and harder for people to garden these days because of time constraints we are all aware of, that when they do go out to the nursery and they buy a few plants and take it home to make a garden, that they succeed with the plants, that they choose good plants for what they want to do. And, you know, it's important for our homes to look nice, for our communities to look nice, because many homes look nice. Gardening does way more than just, you know, a hobby entertainment for people. It provides for wildlife. It cleans the air, cleans water, all those things that we know about, and improves people's health.
Can you think of any trees or plants that you ever put into the zoo where you thought this is going to do great and it didn't do as well as maybe you'd hoped?
Yeah, we don't like to talk about that so much, but
and you can talk about your successes too.
Yeah. Well, ash would be a good story. I mean, that you know, ash were at one time a very popular plant to put in, and now, of course, you wouldn't want to do that because of the ash borer. But yeah, there's, you know, you see recommendations all the time for certain plants like oxydendron. What's the comment on that?
Sourwood,
and you know, rhododendrons and azaleas, things that are popular but are really hard to do in this part of the state because of our soils. So you get that all the time.
Peter, what are some of your favorite plants and flowers as far as durability and survivability in the Midwest?
Well, there's some good ones, and you know, I live in a completely different zone now. And Scott mentioned rhododendrons and azaleas. Those do really well here. So, being a native Midwesterner, it's kind of a treat to be here. But in terms of trees for the Midwest and plants for the Midwest, a genus I'm really fond of is phlox, which is a group of herbaceous plants. In terms of trees, there's probably too many to mention, but
And Peter, I apologize. We're having a little bit of trouble with the phone line there. So what was the first thing that you mentioned?
Which is a group of herbaceous plants that I worked on in school, and ubiquitous in temperate gardens throughout the world.
I know.
But really a great group of plants that do well in Ohio and the Midwest and throughout the eastern U.S.
The genus on that, it was phlox because,
okay.
Yeah, I know he worked on that at school.
And Peter, we're going to give you a quick call back and see if we can't get a better phone line established here. Brian, what about you as far as things that you have on your list, things that that really do well in this area?
So something that we've definitely seen at Spring Grove, we have a lot of tough sites, you know, difficult soils, heavy clay soils, and a lot of waterlogged sites, and things that maybe we wouldn't think of initially because being, you know, native to wetlands or swampy areas, but bald cypress, black gum, button bush, which is a fantastic native shrub, you know, those have been just excellent plants for us to use down at the Arboretum. We love planting oaks and hickories, with Scott mentioning the loss of ash. You know, three of the top things that we plant are are additional oaks, hickories, and elms to help make up for that loss in shade trees from the ash. We had inventoried in 2010 about 500 ash in the developed part of the cemetery, and we're down under 200 now because of emerald ash borer. We are treating those that we have, but that's a pretty significant loss in a relatively short amount of time for us.
And so you're probably like Scott, you wouldn't recommend planting ash trees at this point.
No. Our last one was planted in, I think, 2007. So,
Scott, what about some of the other plants that you'd recommend to people?
We're having a lot of fun with putting, you know, maples are nice. I especially like the Japanese maples. Beautiful small trees that fit in most yards. We're doing a lot with perennials these days, so there's a lot of fun echinacea out there now. A lot of the prairie species that originally were maybe too tall and maybe a little floppy for home gardens have been shrunk down to where they fit better into a typical suburban yard. So you're starting to see some of those plants, like some of the black-eyed Susans and echinacea, a couple of the others. What am I forgetting?
Oh, some of the Joe Pieweed.
Joe Pieweed, especially.
Six
that's
to eight-foot tall species is tough to deal with in a home landscape, but maybe Phantom and some of the other selections that are half that height.
A lot of the heucheras that came out, the corobels in the past, just could not make it in the Midwest. They were very popular because of the colors. They were fantastic, but they failed within a 1 or 2 year period of being planted. Some of the new ones are coming out really seem to have a lot more vigor and are doing much more nicely.
When you have the size staff for horticulture like we do at the Cincinnati Zoo or at Spring Grove, you know, you really need plants that require as little input as possible. We're just 5 full-time and 5 part-time working on horticulture at Spring Grove, and we need to send them off into their planting site and know that they stand a chance with very little extra help.
Yeah, on average, Brian, how many bulbs do you plant each year, and how many of those do the squirrels and the chipmunks actually take care of for you?
Well, we're about a quarter of the way to the zoo's lofty numbers. We do a little upwards of 25,000, although I do have a terrible squirrel story. I got really excited about doing crocus one year, and I think we planted about 500 in this one garden. I had visions of this looking absolutely beautiful. And all winter long, I watched this family of chipmunks. Actually, it was they would dig them up every day. They were eating the crocus bulbs in front of us, next to the parking lot, sort of mocking us every day through the winter. I think we had 5 bulbs that bloomed come spring.
So, how do you, Peter? How do you deal with squirrels and such and chipmunks and keep them from eating bulbs and things like that?
Well, we try to find bulbs that are resistant to them. So like Crocus thomasinianus, the little Tommies as they're called, they seem to be resistant to predation by squirrels and chipmunks. And we have millions of them flowering here at Longwood in February and March. And there's other bulbs too, like winter aconite does really well and seems to be resistant to the predation from squirrels and chipmunks.
Now, Longwood Gardens does plant breeding. Do you have any new varieties that you could suggest for people that they could still plant this year?
There is. So we actually just released a new canna this year, a dwarf canna called Longwood Simply Salmon. And it's on the market. I'm not sure how common it would be out in Ohio, but it should be out there. And it's a great plant if you want to put it in a planter on your deck and get some late season color or plunk it into the landscape. It only gets 2 or 3 feet tall and it'll flower until frost, basically.
And this is canna?
Canna, Longwood Simply Salmon.
Yep. Yeah, I'm not sure if we have that in our area. That's new to me.
It's a tropical that people use either in annual beds or sometimes in containers. Great big foliage, upright plant, usually grown for the foliage, but there's beautiful flowers on top as well.
513-419-7100 if you have any questions about plants that thrive and survive in our area. And you have a topic that sounded really interesting to me, Scott, at the symposium. It's called Planting in a Post-Wild World.
Yeah,
what is that about? That's
I'm really excited by by that talk and that speaker. That's Claudia West. She wrote a book of that same title along with Thomas Rainer. And we saw her speak up in Columbus last winter, and I was flat out enamored. Just one of the best talks I have heard in years. The book is outstanding. It's basically, you know, the premise of the book is that our cities are ever expanding and encroaching on wild pieces of ground.
Yeah, I think the description uses it. We're becoming a global city.
A global city. And I'll just read the line from her description. Planting designers have the opportunity and responsibility to bring wildness and ecological value back into our landscape. I think that's just a fabulous description. So the general idea is a more naturalistic landscape. There's nothing new about that. But the way of introducing the plants as communities, using more native plants, it's an outstanding talk. She's one of the best speakers I have ever heard.
Peter, can you talk about the process of breeding a new plant? I mean, how do you do that? Do you graft different plants? Do you mix seeds? How long does it take to actually breed a plant?
Well, it really depends on what you're working on. And so a lot of our breeding is done by interspecific hybridization, taking two species, you know, swapping the pollen, crossing them together, or two different forms of a given species, crossing those together, and then, you know, evaluating the progeny. And that can take anywhere from 1 year to get a new plant, or it could be something like our Clivia breeding program, where you basically have 20 years before you can start to make a selection. So it's really variable and really depends on what you're working with.
Why is plant breeding and plant design, why is it so important, Peter?
Well, I mean, I think it provides novelty. It provides an opportunity for something new, people to get plants they like in new colors, new forms, more vigor, easier to grow, more disease resistance, more insect resistance, lots of different reasons.
Now, part of the event, too, Scott, that you're having something called the Best Plants Blitz. And that was another thing that caught my eye. And I'm wondering if you could tell me about what that's all about.
I think this will be a lot of fun. You know, the symposiums can – the information is great, and it can be pretty hardcore. You know, it's 6 hours of people talking. So I thought, why don't we break it up with something fun and still a learning opportunity? So each speaker will be presenting 10 – favorite less well-known plants. They have 20 seconds and one picture to talk about it. One of the plants has to be completely embarrassing, guilty pleasure. And one of the plants has to be a complete loser. And the other speakers will be on a panel and evaluating. So they'll be judging the plants that the speakers will have a 1 through 5 judging system. So if they like the plant, they'll present their 5. If they don't like the plant, they'll have their 1. And the audience will be encouraged to boo, hiss, throw things, cuss. I mean, it's hopefully going to be a lot of fun.
So can I ask you, Scott, what your completely embarrassing guilty pleasure plant would be?
Okay, I'm just going to say this. I'm going to backtrack, and I've been kind of liking Spirea a little bit more than I used to. Not all of them. It's way over commonly planted. A lot of them are really garish, but I'm starting to find some things about them I kind of like. So hopefully none of my friends just heard that.
we'll embarrass Peter and Brian, too, and ask them for their completely embarrassing guilty pleasure plant.
Oh, for me, let's see. I sort of am like a child going through Kroger's little candy aisle there. If I see osteospermum in the spring, those flowers, they sort of just hypnotize me. And I know we've never have any success in our place growing them for longer than just the early spring, but I will get them and try anyway. And, these are meant to go through the summer. Okay, I'll try. it's like the snake in the Jungle Book. I get hypnotized and, yes, I must plant 100 of these.
Peter, what about you?
Well, right now I would have to say cleomes, which are pretty commonly planted and easy to grow, but maybe a little old-fashioned, but I've had some reseed around my garden, and I'm totally enamored with them.
Scott, tell us a little more about some of the other speakers you're going to have at the symposium.
Some really good ones. Joe Rothlutner is sort of like Peter. He does a lot of breeding. He was with the Morton Arboretum as their tree and shrub breeder. He just recently left to become director of the Lincoln Park Zoo. So he will be talking about where plants come from with some great choices for the future. Jason Reeves is from the University of Tennessee research station in Jackson. He works for Carol Reeves, who was one of the best speakers we've ever had last year. And he is just one of these all-around plant geeks, young guy that loves everything from the craziest tropical to the orchids to, big oak trees. And just as knowledgeable as you can imagine, he's been to New Zealand. He studied at Longwood, where Peter is now. He's got to talk just a general. We just told him, talk about your favorite plants, and we don't even need a title, really. And then Steve Foltz, my boss.
Better say good things.
Yeah. For years, he's one of the best plantsmen in the entire region. Really right up there, knows plants as well as anybody, knows what does well, takes on the responsibility of recommending good plants for gardeners with incredible seriousness. He will ridicule Brian in a heartbeat.
Sure.
If Brian would recommend one plant that probably won't do real well here in Cincinnati. So I think we were drinking beer one night.
Will he give Peter a hard time is my question.
No, not Peter. He has too much respect for Peter. Yeah. I think we were drinking beer one night, and I convinced him to take a chance and do a talk on the plants that he isn't really convinced will do real well, but he likes anyway. So it's called Steve Foltz Steps Out of His Comfort Zone. And we're going to have everybody in the audience sign a waiver that we're not – Steve nor the zoo are held responsible for the success of these plants, and yet he'll talk about them and show photographs.
Well, what do people generally tell you when they come to these symposiums? What do they tell you about them afterward?
Well, I'll tell you, I take a survey on everyone that we've had, and 88% – the average we've had is I'm trying to get this right now. Basically, I rate this program good, fair, or excellent, good, fair, or poor. We've had one or two fairs. We've had all the rest are good or excellent, with usually like in the 80% is excellent. So people just love them when they leave the program. We have a little social hour afterwards where people can hang out with the speakers. And it's just a feeling of just almost euphoria. People are just really happy. They've been excited by plants all day. They want to talk about them and hang out. Really successful programs.
And you usually get a good attendance at the symposiums?
Absolutely. Yeah, we pretty much fill up the theater there at the zoo for pretty much every one of them.
Now, how do people register for this?
Go to the zoo website. It's a little tricky. Go to Gardens. It the easiest way to find it, go to the zoo website, click on Gardens, click on Plant Trial Day Symposium, and it'll lead you to the web store where we sell the tickets.
And let's talk with Jimmy. He has a question for us. Hi, Jimmy.
I think it's really great that you're spending time talking about the plants. I'm a big supporter of the plants. I hope that the senseless killing will stop. Plants' lives matter. Thank you very much.
Jimmy, okay. Got by the screener on that one.
Well, the thing is
plants, but let's go back for a second. Plants are very important.
They're extremely important
to the environment. They're important to the existence of life on this planet.
But, my joke has always been about plants is to have fun with them. If a plant that you try dies – just try again. People get very serious when they're gardening about, I failed. I'm not a good gardener. No, just learn from the experience. It was just a plant. Put a new one in and learn from it. And we can all be gardeners. We can all be gardeners. It's not something you're born with. There's no such thing as a green thumb. It's just getting the good references and having fun with it and trying it.
And Scott, let's talk about Taking Root as well.
Sure.
The Taking Root campaign that you have going on. First off, tell us what the campaign is.
Well, the campaign is a campaign to plant 2 million trees by 2020. And the purpose for that is to combat the whole ash tree issue and other threats to our canopy through other pest diseases, development, and so forth. We're now in our third year. We're working towards our own 501c3. We've been working under the auspices of the Green Umbrella, which is a great partnership, but we've grown to the point where we're ready to move on ourselves. We've got great events coming up. The Make a Difference Day team last year won a great prize, the Make a Difference. It's a national organization. I think 100 teams win prizes, and ours was one of them, their first year. We're having the Make a Difference Day team event happen again this fall. That information is on the Taking Root website. A lot of good things happening, really exciting.
How many trees planted so far, Scott?
Planted is, and registered are two different things. We are approaching 250,000 trees on the registry. But we need people, if you planted a tree since 2013 or maybe 100 trees since 2013, register on the Taking Root website.
Scott, Peter, and Brian, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Longwood Gardens curator and plant breeder Dr. Peter Zale, horticulture manager at Spring Grove Cemetery and Arboretum Brian Hines, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturist and Taking Root chairman Scott Berline.